Now, you may have made the pilgrimage to worship at a shrine in Dundrum in Dublin, but not a shrine to capitalism and high-end boutiques. Instead, there is a church which hosts art by two Irish women artists, Evie Hone and Susan Mary Yates, and it's filled with many other fascinating historical and artistic artefacts, from the font to the work of some of the finest stained glass artists that we've ever produced. To tell us about this hidden gem, art historian and art tour guide, Jessica Fahey. Jess, welcome back to the programme. Tell us about St. Nahy's Church. Where is it?
So if you're getting the Lewis to go to the shopping mecca, you can see it actually from the Lewis. You're sort of looking down on it, and it's a very small little unassuming rectangular building with a graveyard around it. It's kind of behind the Carnegie building just on the dual carriageway there. So I think most people know the bigger church in Taney a little bit better, which is further up the hill. But this one is, for me, just one of the most special places that you can visit in Dublin.
Tell me about the inside of the church, about the art, and about the idea to have art alongside religious artefacts. Was that an unusual one?
Well, the artworks are religious artworks, so it wouldn't be that unusual. But this is a Church of Ireland church, and it hadn't actually been that common from the time of the iconoclasms, when they were very anti-depictions of the divine, to have images in churches. So it would be a little rare from that perspective. But in the 19th century, it became sort of more common with the advent of kind of neo-Gothic kind of style within churches in UK. So in this case too, though, what is more unusual is that there had been a tendency, even with the boom in Catholic churches in Ireland, to just buy it off the rack. So it was almost like you go and you have your catalogue and you pick out the stained glass window you want. They're usually from Munich, and they ship them over, and that same one might be in 20 other churches. But in this instance, in St. Nahy's, it's just extraordinary that they decided to go with these new local, in some cases very local, cooperatives of arts and crafts people making the works themselves from scratch.
And why did that happen?
So it is a good question, because when we sort of look at it in relation to the broader picture in Ireland, it isn't happening that many other places. But I think in the case of St. Nahy's, it may well be a Yates connection. So at the time, the vicar was a man called William Monk Gibbon. His son of the same name is better known. He was a poet. But the father, he becomes vicar in 1900, and he's there till 1937. And most of these works seem to be commissioned during that time. So I think his connection to the Yates family and the Yates sisters, who were working over in Dunamer with Evelyn Gleeson in Dundrum, might be the reason why this all happens here at this time.
And we will get to those in a few minutes. But tell me about a few other things. The graveyard slabs that were found in the churchyard, they're of quite important historical importance.
So usually outside my area of expertise, in that they're about 1,000 years old, but I did do a little bit of research on them. And when they first discovered them, this is only around 2002, they thought that they might have been pre-Christian, because the designs on them would be kind of sort of circular, almost like spiral design that we'd expect at Newgrange or something like that. But then through more research and study, they've realised they're Viking era. And these types of stone that, essentially would have either, you know, cup shapes or circular shapes or crosses on them, would in fact also have been some type of grave marker. So the fact that they have two of them just in the porch as you walk in this church gives you an indication of just how much there is to see here.
People probably know, when you mentioned the Duke of Wellington, Arthur Wellesley, the connection with Merrion Square in Dublin, the connection with Trim in County Meath, but his baptismal font is in this church.
Yeah, so he wasn't baptised in this church. It was in a church called St. Andrew's, I think, in Camden Row, St. Kevin, sorry, and that was moved in the 1920s, closed in the 1920s, so they moved the baptismal font. So it has ended up here in St. Nahy's, and it is a very shiny, dark sort of black stone, essentially, very ominous looking artefact. And given the relationship, I suppose, with Wellington and Ireland, not always the most straightforward, that it seems to signify that quite well. So his fame, I think, as you've just mentioned, you know, in connection to Ireland isn't as much sort of recognised. And it's interesting to me that it isn't an object that more people would want to go and see, given just how important he is, you know, in terms of Waterloo and Napoleon Julian and all of these things we know about him.
I've mentioned Evie Hone, the artist and stained glass maker. Some listeners might have seen the big exhibition that happened featuring her and Mainey Jellett in the National Gallery over the summer. There is a piece of her glass in the church as well.
There is. And it's really fascinating because it literally in the same, you know, moment that you see the two Viking slabs and the baptismal font behind it, the window is this extraordinary 1933 window by Evie Hone. The reason I say extraordinary is that it isn't in any way typical of what we expect for stained glass, which usually would have figures in some sort of form of narrative. And although in the centre part there are two figures, the Virgin and the Angel Gabriel, because it's an Annunciation scene, all of the rest of it is very deliberately abstract design and almost identical to the type of abstract work that she was doing when she was in France in the 1920s, studying with cubists like André Le Haut and Albert Glaze. So the bringing in of that modern avant-garde to a sort of traditional medium like stained glass just shows you how great she was and how revolutionary.
Do we know why that window ended up there? Because it would have been, revolutionary is maybe a strong word, but not necessarily the done thing at the time.
Yes, so again, it's to do a connection to the area. So when she was younger, in fact, when she was about 11 years old, she had polio and she also fell while decorating the church in Taney. Now, I think it was the one up the hill. So her family must have had some known connection to it. So I believe that that may well be the reason why that she got this opportunity, because it's probably one of her first public windows as well.
Tell me about the Glass Cooperative on Tour Glynne. Who began that?
So Evie Hone was a member, but not until the 1930s. It was actually founded in 1903 by the wonderful Sarah Purser on the suggestion of Edward Martin. So Edward Martin at the time, down in Loughrea in County Galway, was instigating this building of a great big cathedral, St. Brendan's Cathedral. And he wanted it to be filled with artworks made by Irish people. And there was a few other people around this time, people like Michael Davitt, who had these ideas about how important art would be to the general public and not just be something for the elite. So there was kind of a political and social motivation behind it too. So he suggested it to Sarah Purser and she thought it was a great idea. And she ends up then headhunting an artist called A.E. Child, who was working in the kind of William Morris sort of style arts and crafts movement over in London. He comes over then to teach in the Dublin Metropolitan School of Art, because Sarah Purser knew you needed to get the talent trained first before you could set up a cooperative for them to work in. So the idea ultimately, although it was her money in the beginning, was that everyone would become shareholders. So each individual would get a project and they could, you know, bid for them within the cooperative. They'd work on it from start to finish. So from the designs to the actual stained glass making, they would do it all. And then over time, the, you know, ability to use the materials and to use the facilities, they would be able to sort of buy their own ownership of the organisation, which was such a great idea.
In St. Nahy's, there are five windows by Catherine Amelia Kitty O'Brien. Who is she? Mm-hmm.
So she was from Spansel Hill down in County Clare, and she was from a Protestant sort of landed aristocracy family, but ended up going to the local convent in Ennis. And it seems that somewhere in her training, you know, even as a schoolgirl, she showed this promise for art. So she ends up in the Dublin Metropolitan School of Art on a scholarship. She ends up studying there a little bit under William Morpin a little later, but also under A. Child, and very clearly is this exceptional artist in stained glass. So her and Michael Healy would be two of the first people that Sarah Purser invites in to join this cooperative. And then she goes on to ultimately taking over the directorship from Sarah Purser when she retires in 1940, then buying them all out entirely and setting up her own business and on into the 1950s. So a very successful artist.
I'm conscious I mentioned them earlier, but we haven't quite gotten to them yet. Maybe we finish with the exceptionally talented Yeats family, the sisters, who were remarkable women who made their lives about art as much as the brothers did.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that's sort of endlessly frustrating to me, I have to say, because so much attention is given to the brothers and people sort of suggest that the sisters wouldn't be remembered at all if it wasn't for the more famous brothers. And that absolutely isn't true, because what they managed to do in Ireland and in Dublin, and particularly for women, was to really show that women can do whatever they want, whatever they put their mind to. And both of them come down to us as these sort of difficult characters. Now, to be fair, that's often their siblings saying the bad things about them. So, you know, be careful who writes your biography. But in terms of what they were doing for art, they were raised with a father, John Butler Yeats, who was trying his whole life to be a successful portrait painter. But he was not a good businessman, so he never really made money. So the daughters end up being the ones to raise and earn the money for the whole family, with Lily studying with the Morris family under May Morris, embroidery, and she worked incredibly long hours for very little money in order to do this. And then Elizabeth, better known in the family as Lolly, she learned how to use a printing press. She was also writing stories for magazines like The Vegetarian, and she printed books on painting, and then she was teaching painting as well. So we have all of this skill and ability that they have, and rather than just end up working, you know, it, sort of separately, they come to Ireland and they join with a woman called Evelyn Gleeson, and they set up an industry called Dunamer, which is again in Dundrum, in Evelyn Gleeson's house. And there, Lily is in charge of embroidery, and Elizabeth Lolly is in charge of printing. And they do incredible things, both in terms of the art they produce, but also in teaching the local women how to have these skills. They teach them Irish, about Irish culture, all of these things.
I haven't been before, but it's a trip that I'll definitely be taking at some point in the very foreseeable future. Jessica Fahey, thanks for filling us in on an art pilgrimage at the end of the Green Lewis Line, St. Nahy's Church in Dundrum. Jessica is running a course on the art and architecture of the Georgian period from October 2nd through the UCD Access and Lifelong Learning Programme. The email is all@ucd.ie, and she's also doing a course on Irish modernism at the National Gallery. For more information on her art tours, Jessica's website is jessicafaheyarthistorian.com.